Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have another very fun episode. My guest today is a fellow Broadway Podcast Network person hosting his own podcast called Your Program Is Your Ticket, discussing smaller, more intimate theater works with people that make it happen. So he's also seen Cats many times over the years, including smaller productions, has a little bit of a history with the show, a love-hate relationship with it. So Sean Chandler, thank you for joining me. Excited to have you here.
Mike, I'm like super stoked. Thank you for agreeing to put me on your show. This is really exciting.
I want any and all perspectives of Cats out there for the world. And as someone who has experience with it, seen multiple versions of it, including small theater productions of it, I want to hear your version. And especially as long as, we'll see if I totally agree with you if you argue for Grisabelle at the end. But I want to get as many non-Grisabelle arguments out there, too. So let's kick it off. I always love hearing the very first time you saw Cats. Tell me about when, where, the experience.
The first time I saw Cats was the original Broadway production. It was in December of 1982. And it was during my senior class drama trip with my drama department at my high school in Downey, California. And it was the last show that we saw. And it was one on one of those trips. There used to be a promotional campaign. I don't know if you are familiar with it or maybe remember. Probably not. But it was called the I Love New York campaign.
Okay,
and the commercials went something like this. I mean, you'd see the Rockettes in the middle of Times Square kicking, or somebody from a production singing. I forgot what the big productions were way back then, 42nd Street or Dreamgirls or something, and they would sing "I Love New York," and that was and so everybody came to New York, and they offered schools trips, the I Love New York trip, and a group of us would fly down or fly over, I should say. And they put everybody up in the Milford Plaza Hotel on 8th. You know what the Milford Plaza Hotel?
I do. I'm also just laughing because my one trip with school, which was not part of this campaign and was they put us in the Wellington, and it's very similar. And not far. I think they're down the street, right? They're really close to each other, aren't they?
I've never heard of the Wellington, but the Milford Plaza Hotel now, it's on 8th and 44th. And it's now called Row NYC. And so it's very, very possible. What's really interesting, though, is I can actually have a great view from my apartment. I live in Hell's Kitchen, and I can actually see the old ghost sign of Milford, the Milford Plaza going down the building. But it's an okay hotel. It's off of 8th, and a lot of people, when they come to New York and they walk up and down 8th Avenue, they're like, wow, this is kind of seedy and a little pervy, if you will. And it was 10 times worse when I was here. This is before anybody came in and cleaned up and Disneyfied New York. So
that area is fine now, for sure.
Oh yeah, it is. That would be, we would call it fine. Other people may not call it fine, but it's fine in comparison to what it was.
Yeah.
Dang, it was opened my little, a gay boy 17-year-old eyes.
So they flew you across country as part of this campaign to get people to travel to New York.
It was huge. Yeah, I mean they.
And you saw shows? Like, what is that? I did. You just saw a bunch of Broadway shows and probably went to all the tourist spots.
Yes, yes. I was here, I think, for like 5 full days. I saw 7 shows.
Wow.
And of course, we toured and we went on Staten Island Ferry. But in this campaign, the amount that you paid covered your airplane ticket, your hotel stay, and 2 Broadway shows. And one of those was Cats. The other one was 9. This is the original production of 9 that featured Raul Julia back in the day. And I saw a bunch of other shows. I saw Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, since we're talking, you know, Andrew Lloyd Webber here.
Sticking to his shows.
And Torch Song Trilogy. It was a really super fun trip for a drama geek like me. Cats was the last show that we saw, and it was over at the Winter Garden Theater. And let's just say that we imbibed. We were high school seniors, and you know, so we were partying a little bit here and there. And by the time we saw Cats, I was on my 7th show. And honestly, I was like, this isn't hitting me. I'm not jiving with this. I don't get it. I'm ready to fall asleep watching this. And I just thought, well, you know, maybe it's just because I'm tired. And but I kind of lied and said, oh, I loved it, and told everybody that I thought it was great. And it was just, you know, that theater peer pressure. It was kind of like when I saw Hamilton the first time. I had a really hard time telling people that I just wasn't catching on to it when everyone's like, oh, Hamilton. Same with Strange Loop that I just saw, but that's a whole other story / podcast. But so I honestly was like, I everybody, it was great. Cats was great. And this is before the Tony Awards and all of that, and before Betty Buckley won her Tony. Side note on Betty Buckley, she biffed one of her lyrics in memory.
Wow.
It was like memory. I mean, she changed from midnight to memory, like within like a fraction of a syllable. I had forgotten about that till my friend Blair, who went with me, was like, oh, you remember when Betty Buckley made a huge mistake?
you get to see almost history. So you're 17. That's what you said. You're around 17-ish when you're going to see this. You 17. Are either still potentially intoxicated or hungover, and it's the last show of your trip.
Mm-hmm.
And you see Cats.
Yeah.
Isn't that like almost ideal scenario if you were a little intoxicated, of like kind of the right age? Because like too young is too weird. Too like teenage, early teenager, I think is too much. I think at that point you're an adult. Like you're an older teenager that you really can understand what's happening in the show. Or if it's not portrayed, like it's not going to be too much if you see it at that point. And you're intoxicated, which is really what I wish everyone would have told me before I saw it, is to have just a little bit of extra help. So you should have been like peak performance for this, and you didn't like it, and you just pretended to so you can, you know, fit in at the time.
One would think, right? I mean, but you have to remember, I was like, well, you have to know. Sorry, you weren't there. You don't remember. You have to know that I was sitting in the balcony at like the second row from the top. And it was warm, and the show was just weird and strange, and I wasn't hooking into it at all. I just don't think I got it, and I wanted to like it, and maybe I should have gotten a little more, I don't know, ripped. I should have been like shit faced seeing this.
You need to see it earlier in the trip when you were, you know, in peak performance. End of trip, you're kind of on the downslope.
Yeah, probably, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Definitely. After 7 days, 5 days, it's you're done.
Oh yeah. I saw shows that I liked way more, including 9. I liked 9. 9 was a little adult for me, but it's a Chorus Line and just a lot of great stuff. So here's this show with a bunch of cats, you know, crawling around and pawing at people, and I just didn't get it. It would take years before I finally would.
I love it. You can name all the shows you saw, and there's probably, besides Joseph, I probably have not seen a single one of them that you saw on that trip.
Okay, so you've never seen Torch Song Trilogy.
Never heard of it. There's going to be a bunch I probably have never even heard of. Okay. I never heard of 9.
9, okay.
I have not seen Chorus Line, but I've heard of it. I at least know what that one is.
I saw a show called Monday After the Miracle, which was the sequel to The Miracle Worker. I know, right? The sequel to The Miracle Worker. You've heard of The Miracle Worker, right?
Heard of The Miracle Worker. I've never heard of the sequel.
Okay. There's a good reason for that. Yeah, okay. Because I think it closed the day after I saw it. So basically, I killed the sequel to The Miracle Worker very, very clearly. And I saw a show called Pump Boys and Dinettes, which is...
Nope, never heard of it.
Yeah. And I don't know. I forget everything else. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. This is why I host a Broadway themed podcast, is because of my extensive knowledge on all of this stuff. Okay, so when's the next time you saw it then? Because I know you didn't like it then, but you've had kind of this roller coaster of experience with it.
Well, as I had said in our pre-discussions, I figured, I guess for my own sake, I'm going to do a little scorecard here, and it's going to be called The Cats Giveth and The Cats Taketh Away.
Love it.
Because I feel like I've just been, the cats have batted me around so much. It's just, you know, my brain, it explodes with cats. Anyway, so that particular, the first go around, The Cats Taketh Away, for sure. Because I had they taketh away. Okay, so now fast forward to 1991. And this is when my husband David and I first got together. We've been together for 30 plus years.
This is 9 years after you saw the first one. You said it was 82, 83?
Yeah, 82. And then this is 91.
Okay, so 91. Okay.
Yeah, so that is, with math, that's 90.
Yeah, yeah. Right, quick right. math.
Yeah, exactly. It was when we first got together. And one night before we were falling asleep, we started talking about cats. We were talking about shows that we've seen. And he reveals to me that he absolutely hated it. Now, he did see a touring production of it. But he went on and on. He was like, I swear to God, they said the word Jellicle, whatever the hell that is, at least 1,000 times just within the opening, like, song. It was like the first 8 minutes, and Jellicle. And he goes, and as if that wasn't bad enough, about 2/3 of the way through, they ratchet up the music. It goes da 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 da, and they start singing the whole entire chorus again, multiple octaves higher. He was like, just kill me now, please. Now this is gonna come back to a good thing eventually, but it was the first time I had ever heard anyone say out loud that they hated cats. And the first time, honestly, I was like, oh my God, somebody like kind of agrees with me. And I don't know if I hated it, but I just thought I appreciated the artistic version. I just didn't like it very much. But anyways, I will tell you this. It was then and there that I decided that I would marry that man.
That honest to God. That sealed the deal. I've asked a lot of people that tell me they hate it, because I, you know, when people learn that I have a podcast about cats, they either love it or hate it. And the love is like a deep love of like thoughtful and like what they, you know, character that they liked or that they associated with. Everyone that hates it, I've yet to find anybody give me a reason. That's the first reason that I've heard of, like, they went up an octave higher and they didn't, you know, said this. Like, most people just are like, it's just not my cup of tea. That is the first, like, dedicated, thoughtful, this is what I didn't like about it. And I've been waiting to find somebody that hates it for, like, a true, like, thought out, drawn out reason. It sounds like that's your husband.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. And I honestly, I breathed. It was like, you know, I exhaled. Yeah. Like the movie Waiting to Exhale, I exhaled. I was like, okay, yes. This is the person I meant to spend however long I can with in this life. But yeah, I'm so glad that he could validate you as he could validate me when it comes to cats. So yeah, it was hilarious. So in 1991, the cats giveth me, you know, somebody who I bond with that actually didn't like it. Well, his was a little bit more vitriolic.
Yeah, yeah. He was serious about it. He had thought it through.
Oh my God, totally. We were just howling. It was then that night also that he was doing, I think, The Phantom of the Opera in the voice of Cher and Carol Channing. So that sealed the deal right there. You know, and come on, I'm in love. Okay, so do you want me to fast forward? Let's just keep going.
Follow me through the whole thing. I love this.
Okay. 15 years later, I see the Broadway revival. Now, I decide, you know what? I'm going to go see the Broadway revival because I feel a little nostalgic.
So this is the 2016 revival.
Yes, the one that was
just recently on at Neil Simon.
Yeah, Neil Simon Theater. Now, David and I are decades married and living in New York City now. So we're, it's, you know, time has passed. And as I said, I decided to go see the revival for nostalgia's sake. And so I asked David if he wants to attend, and he was like, you know, I'll go, whatever. Now, he took your advice. I myself don't drink anymore, but he had probably two or three drinks and said, sure, yeah, why not?
Yeah, that's perfect.
We got front row seats, which is always makes some stuff. Okay, it makes most stuff better when you have a front row seat because you're right there and it's for you. So he says, I'll go.
Now, I want to see, where in the run is it? Is it early on? Like, did you see Leona Lewis or did you see Mamie?
I saw both.
Okay.
But at
this time,
at that
is the Leona Lewis one.
Right. It was Leona Lewis when, okay, you know way more about Cats than you're claiming.
I know about Cats. I don't know about anything else about Broadway. I know a lot about Cats from 2016 on, and a little bit that I've learned over time about all the different productions, because I've now talked to people in almost every production that's been globally done.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Slowly getting there.
Okay. I bow to you for your dedication and your commitment to the Cats of all musicals. I love it. That's great. Anyways, yeah, we saw Leona Lewis.
Okay. So this is early in the run then.
Way early in the run. I don't even think they had opened yet.
Maybe we're at the same production, because I saw the second to last preview. I saw a Saturday matinee in 2016, and that was my first experience with the show ever. And it sounds like it's around the same time you got to see it as your second experience with the show with your husband, who hates the show.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Okay. So now you're back. I think we're back to the taketh.
Well, kind of. No.
Okay.
Let me reverse that. So we go and we're watching it, and all of a sudden at the end of act one, before they, you know, when they cut the light, bring the lights back up to intermission, we both looked at each other, and much to our surprise at the same time, we said, I love it. Now, so there are a few things that happened here. Okay. I'm a little more grown up. I'm not drunk or high. He's drunk. So obviously those two things worked in our favor, the reverse of before. And Andy Blankenbuehler went in and he tightened up the choreography considerably. And that I recognized myself.
Okay. I love that you recognize, because that's the part where I'll have no idea. And I've heard amazing things about Andy's changes and how it differs and some of the things. And every time everyone tells me, I'm like, I saw people dancing. I didn't see anything else. I don't know the first thing about the twirls from Mistopheles and the kicks. I learned that the stage is raked, which blows my mind, that means it's on a tilt. Like, that's crazy in itself. But I'm glad that theater people recognize it, because he definitely made a lot of changes and a lot of like thoughtful ways of how to change the choreography to make it his style. And that went right over my head. But I'm glad that you recognized it.
I mean, I think that it also had the benefit of having been around for what, at that point, 40 years.
Yeah, they hit their 40-year mark like during COVID. So it would have been 38-ish years, probably, something around that.
Yeah. So maybe they've had time to, you know, tinker with it a little bit and, you know, play with it and make it move along faster and tighter, and which is good. I can imagine that a show like that forever, a dance show, might get a little sloppy here and there. But
well, if you want to see a tight version, Royal Caribbean, they do a 90-minute version on a cruise.
Do they really?
Yeah, they do a 90-minute version now, because with people not paying, they couldn't have an intermission because no one came back,
right?
So they had to cut, and I don't know exactly what they cut. I'm still trying to get all the details on that, but there's the current Royal Caribbean, it's currently happening, is a 90-minute production.
Oh my god. Wow. David and I just went on a cruise and we saw a longer version of Million Dollar Quartet than that. I mean, this one was like over 2 hours, and you only get 90 minutes of Cats, but that's probably very, very
soon
smart.
Vacation. Next vacation for you.
Right.
For you,
exactly.
You're ready to go.
Well, there is an abbreviated version of the Phantom of the Opera, or at least there was in Las Vegas. They did one that was like, I don't know, like 90 minutes, maybe 100 minutes long. But in Las Vegas, it's like the casino bosses.
Yeah, they can't have you in there for 3 hours for sure. Right.
They want that stuff starting on time and then ending. I remember I read this a book by Rosie O'Donnell where she talked about how she went overtime with one of her comedy sets in Las Vegas. And boy, they were like right up her nose over it.
I believe that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's money.
For sure. Okay. So you're 2016. You're loving it intermission.
Right. I'm loving it. And then by the end of it, I'm, you know, standing ovation, David right there, you know, both of us just clapping and in tears. So I'm going to give it that the cat's giveth.
Okay.
In that
2016 giveth.
2016 giveth. Also, I had the privilege of interviewing a gentleman by the name of Adam Wolf on my podcast. And he's like one of those, he's a percussionist, and he's one of those musicians that travels as a sub from different, from one production to the next, as you know, whenever they need a drummer because somebody's on vacation or something like wow. that. And he drummed for Cats quite a bit, he told me. So that's very definitely because of him, the giveth. Also, for that production, if I may say, I had the fortunate nature, and I don't know if you've interviewed her, but my friend John Marins, who is a writer, he's a playwright, and he's a Pulitzer finalist playwright.
Wow.
He was hired to rewrite the book for Paint Your Wagon for a production at the Muni Theater in St. Louis, Missouri. And his female lead was Mamie Paris. And I not only did I see her in the show, but we went and saw the show with John, and he invited us backstage to the big cast party that they had. I talked to her for the longest time. She is one of the nicest actors I have ever talked to in my life, just asking me about me. And, you know, actors usually don't ask me about me, and that's fine. No big deal. But she was just really super nice.
I completely agree. She was early on in the people I got to interview and was wonderful. And I did get to see her perform because I went almost to the day a year later and got to see her version of it. And, you know, at that point, I don't know who any of these people are at all. And I just remember being blown away by her memory. And then I agree. She was so nice, wonderful. And have been hoping to see her in other stuff because I just want to see, you know, she just was so talented singing, you know, belting that out that I knew she was doing something in the Muni because now I follow her on social media and kind of get to stay in touch with other things she's doing. But yeah, she was fantastic. But it was also early on of me arguing with Grizabella's. And so she was in the first couple Grizabella's I got to talk to where I was like, I hope you're okay with me having my entire podcast thesis being about how I don't think your performer should win. Like, I don't think that you should end the show with your song. And that's the whole crux of my podcast. So thankfully she was super fun with it. And most Grizabellas are, but usually they defend themselves.
Yeah. Oh yeah. She seemed like she didn't take things too seriously, and which is great because in the context of the show, she was brilliant.
Completely.
I saw her from the front row. I went back because I go and see shows a lot over and over just to study them, but from the front row. And then I saw the show from the very last row in the Neil Simon Theater, and the exact same impact completely.
Yeah. I was definitely up in that when I saw her, but if you get a chance, I mean, I think her Macy's Day Parade version is out there. I mean, there's some videos of her singing Memory that are on YouTube that are, you know, incredible. So I'm glad I got to see her do it in 2017. I feel happy, especially after getting to see, because she's very different than Leona Lewis. So seeing like two very different Grizabellas was,
yeah.
And the only two times I've ever seen the show live are those two experiences. So eventually I'm going to get to see a tour or a third version or another version. But right now for as much as I know, I've still only seen the show twice live.
Well, and what two amazing performers to see, because mm-hmm. I agree with you. I thought that they both had very different takes on the character of Grizabella. Leona Lewis was she was a little slower, a little more languid, and you could feel the weight of everything on her. I thought Mamie Paris, while she moved slow, she felt a little more brittle and confused. As I got the vibe that she was like losing her memory and her mind. Oh my God, did you see what I just did?
That was
an unintentional pun. I'm very, very sorry about that. But you know what I mean? And a lot of the Grisabellas are like that. They, mm-hmm. I think that it's one of those great roles because you can play it to the strength of the performer,
mm-hmm.
and sort of the vibe they give off on stage.
Yeah. And they have to do it in 15 minutes. That's the craziest part. They have 15 minutes on stage. So to convey a message like that of that much power is a feat in itself.
Right. And like little itty bitty doses here and there, mm-hmm. you know, I would think that the hardest part of that, you probably have heard him say this, is just staying in that mindset when you're sitting back in your dressing room.
Yeah. And then belting out. I mean, they got to really belt out at the end of the show.
Yeah. They're not, you know, on sort of the roller coaster ride of the dancing like the rest of the cats are. Mm-hmm. They just pop in and have to, you know, be downtrodden and loud.
Completely. We'll be back for more of this Catstastrophe after a short break.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So anyways, I don't know if I had said so, but the cats giveth on the revival.
Okay.
They really, really did. And now, and I'm sure that this is discussed ad nauseum, 2019, the movie.
Which is what started this podcast, was the trailer for this movie.
Really?
That was what triggered it. That's what triggered the joke. That's what triggered the request to start the podcast. And that's how it went. And really, I led everything up to seeing the movie in press. So we saw a press version pretty early. We saw the version that was not finished, you know, the one that got, because they famously finished it that week. So I did get to see with the producer of the show a press version. But yeah, everything that movie is what is really, you know, the butterfly effect of this whole podcast.
It's like the total catalyst. It went, and like, what a great catalyst for it.
It was definitely life-changing in many ways.
Cats, life-changing. That can be their new, you know, their new
that's their poster. New slogan right there. Okay, so when did you go see this? Did you go see it like opening night? Like,
we went and saw it on Christmas Day. I think it opened to the public on Christmas Day.
It opened, yeah, around then. It opened, it might have been that, it was that weekend, basically. It was like leading up to that. So yeah, so you went on Christmas Day.
Yeah, I mean, David's family lives in California. My family lives in Alabama now. So we weren't with our family. So a bunch of orphans got together and went and saw Cats on Christmas Day and went for sushi afterwards.
Yeah.
Isn't that appropriate?
That's exactly.
Okay, that's an intentional pun, but we did go for sushi. I think it was the only thing open on Christmas Day. Now, I actually don't really have like the hatred of the movie. I thought it was okay. I thought it was enough so that somebody who could never afford to go to theater could actually watch it and get the gist. I do agree that it needed a lot more work. I felt like it needed like an additional $50 million and two more months in the CGI studio So they clean some stuff up.
They spent $50 million more than they should have to begin with. They spent over $100 million on that movie.
Well, at that point, you know, when they're just burning money, it's like somebody should have coughed up $50 million more and just to make it passable and watchable. I mean, everybody was talking about like the cat's feet would disappear and the lines were fuzzy and stuff. I didn't really catch that. I will tell you this. I did not care for Jennifer Hudson as Grizabella.
Okay. I actually didn't mind her that much. That wasn't my gripe. I had a lot of other gripes, but I think mine are different than a lot of most people's. I was personally not a fan of some of the decisions they made, not about the movie. They released it against, I forget what, it was a Marvel movie or something else. Like it opened on the same day as like a mega movie as well. They released the trailer the same day that Top Gun released their trailer, which still hasn't come out as of now. But like they made a lot of questionable decisions for what should be a movie that was going to be a blockbuster. Like you try to own a weekend or you try to own a piece, and they just didn't do any of it. And so that was my bigger gripe, is just like the business decisions behind a lot of it felt really off. And then the jump cutting editing, like you couldn't see any of the dance. I didn't mind the Victoria being the like narrator all the way through. I thought that was pretty clever. I didn't mind Taylor Swift's part. I didn't mind the new song. Like most of that stuff didn't bother me as much as a lot of the like clear decisions about making this into a mega movie that failed. And it seemed like I could have told you that wasn't going to work before any of the other criticisms.
Well, when I saw the trailers early on, I thought, cool, you know, I could buy into what I'm seeing. I really could. I was disappointed as far as that goes. I didn't really think of it from a marketing perspective, but I did think that it needed like a lot more work before they released it.
Oh, totally. I think what tipped me off was I did see a press viewing, which was just a filled theater. It was the day after like the true press opening, like the big kind of major one. Mm-hmm. But so everybody in that theater was either press or family and friends. So it should be a crowd that is professional or that is there for it. And about 5-10 minutes in, everyone's laughing, like vocally, hysterically laughing. And that was the moment where I was like, it doesn't matter what happens. If this crowd can't handle it, then there's no public audience that's going to be able to handle this the way that they intended it to be handled. Like that was not the intention of that movie. It wasn't supposed to be a laugh at the screen movie. It was supposed to be a serious version of this production, and people were cracking up.
They were doing the same thing in the theater we were in. Again, I wasn't, but I kind of liked it. I don't know. Maybe I gave it way too much of a
chance. Have you seen it since?
No, and okay. I don't think I will.
I would be very curious to hear your take after, because I tried to watch it. Let me rephrase that. I tried to watch it with my family in Indiana, and we got about halfway through and they all looked at me, and a couple of my mom's the theater fan, like I thought that they would enjoy it. I got the people who I knew wouldn't enjoy it, like my dad, away. I'm like, don't even attempt this. So I got the people in my family I thought would enjoy it. About halfway through, they looked at me and they go, does it get any better? And I go, not really. This is pretty much the level you're going to see. And they turned it off. And so I would love to, like, even I was just like, yeah, I'm good. I don't need to see the rest. So I'd love to see you rewatch it and see, like, was it the magic of the moment of like the hype around it? And it was 2019 and Christmas. And you did have a, you know, it was where you realized that you had your husband for forever. Like, is there that moment, or was it just you actually truly enjoyed it?
No, I mean, I wouldn't say that I enjoyed it, but I didn't hate it like everybody else was hating it that I was with. One of the big reasons why I didn't like Jennifer Hudson is because she was nose crying through half of it. And that was grossing me out in a big way. I was like, oh my God, come on, blow your nose. I know you've got an Oscar, but ugh. I mean, I liked the Dear Evan Hansen movie. I was grateful that whoever can't afford to come and see a version of this can actually see a version of it. Is it the best? No, but there it is.
So it's interesting timing that you bring that up, because I did see, and by the time this releases, it's going to be a little past, but somebody on Twitter, and I don't know who it was, mention, because right now when we're recording this, Coachella is going on, and Coachella is basically live streaming on YouTube. So you can watch Coachella performances as they are. And that's always been a, well, they sell out. How will they do that? And someone on theater Twitter posted, like, could this be the blueprint? Like, could we do this? Could we put a show out once a week or every once in a while? And I'm all for that, because I do think, like, the Hamilton on Disney Plus helped a lot of people see Hamilton who otherwise would probably have trouble finding the four tours that are on or Broadway, and it's not as accessible.
And or so, the money.
Or the money, yeah. I mean, just in general, it's hard. It's expensive and hard to get to. And so in Indiana, five shows come through a year. That's it. There's five tours, and that's all you get from Broadway, or you get local regional theater. And so putting this on a platform that makes it accessible, I don't think hurts ticket sales. I think would help. And so I was excited to read that and hoping that, like, maybe that becomes a reality.
Well, it very definitely became a reality over the COVID shutdown. For sure. It was the really what we had left was anything that was online, whether it was, you know, picking up clips off of YouTube or going onto Zoom and seeing readings and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I don't really necessarily want to take away the value of being able to go and see live theater and the challenge that sometimes we have with that, because that in itself is an art form. But totally. I do like it when you can bring the theater, even if it's after a little while, you know, when the producers make back their money or whatever, you can bring the theater to the people.
Yeah. And I saw that idea. It immediately resonated. And I kept thinking, you know, I'm a subway ride away to any show I want to see. And if I have the cash, you can basically get a ticket to anything. If you have enough, I mean, some are expensive, but you can get into most shows. And that's not the case for my family, you know, in Indiana, or, you know, they're waiting for, oh God, I forget, Mean Girls, I think was the last thing that was there. Like, they're waiting for their tour to come through. And it's just different, you know, again, cost, everything that goes with it, being able to say, you know what, I could stream that in that window and make a massive reach would help for some of these things. Like, you listed off in the beginning of this podcast a bunch of things I'd never even heard of. And I don't know if I could ever go find video. I mean, I guess I'd go do a press inquiry at the Lincoln Center and try to get into their library and watch a recording. But you can't go find most of these things. And I know this because I've actually tried. I've wanted to see a couple older productions of things that are super famous, and they just don't exist. And I know that they do because I know they recorded them all. But they're just not. There's Broadway HD, and there's a couple things that have a few. But there's not a stage performance of a lot of things. And I, as someone who now has learned stuff over time, but, you know, would like to see some of this history of some of these shows that just aren't on current stage. And it's really hard to find.
Yeah. I mean, you might be able to find like a community theater production that will post their production on YouTube. But yeah, I agree. And the paradigm is very, very different from in Alabama, or you said you're from Idaho?
Indiana,
okay. Sorry.
Other I.
I knew it was one of the I states.
I stayed somewhere in the middle of the country.
Right. Indiana. I remember I took my sister and my niece and nephew, who are teenagers, to see Dear Evan Hansen. And I was like, well, it's not, you know, what I've seen on stage. And they were like, we loved it. And that's a very different take than you'd get if you asked some people here in New York and you know I don't know I thought they were too mean to that show, but I also love that show like tremendously. So yeah, I mean, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
And so it is helpful, and maybe not in the helpful in the way we think about it on the coast, but go a little, you know, towards the center of the United States, and They're glad for it.
Completely.
Yeah.
All right. This is getting a little too serious for this podcast. So we're gonna need to switch gears. I want to go into rapid fire. I want to talk about some pieces of the show and your take on it. So if you were in the show, which cat would you want to play?
Oh my gosh. I would probably want to play the one who does the least amount of dancing.
That's probably Old Deuteronomy or Buster for Joe.
Yeah, I'm thinking they're going to give me Old Deuteronomy. I mean, I'm old enough and I have the low voice to play him. I'll even sit on the damn tire through intermission. Yeah, I don't care.
I mean, that's crazy. That is a crazy piece of this.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't.
Old Deuteronomy. I love it. What is your favorite song on the show?
I'd have to say the one that I think really slays if it's done well is Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer.
The first time I saw it, that was the song stuck in my head.
Yeah.
The entire time I left the theater. Like,
yeah.
And I didn't know any of the songs except for Memory when I walked in there. Had no idea. And the whole time that was the song I sang. So I'm with you. I think that that's like such a cool piece too. It's also one of the few times that it's just those two cats on stage. Like it's not the whole group kind of together.
Yeah. That song, that number has to slay.
Yeah,
it really does. It, cause I've seen online some people not doing it well and out of breath and stuff. So anyways, go on. Next question.
Who are your favorite and least favorite cats in the show?
Okay. I think I'm, I'd have to say Mr. Mistopheles is my least favorite. I think he's kind of conceited and stuck up and very, he's a little too precious for me.
Okay.
And I think my favorite cat is probably, and this has to do with the last performer who played her, is Jenny Any Dots. And I loved that she taps. And I don't know if you know the actress who played her. Her name is Eloise Kropp. Mm-hmm. She is a brilliant tap dancer. I saw her in Dames at Sea, I think, in the production that they did a couple of years ago here in New York. She is amazing.
Yeah, and she was in, I have interviews. She's amazing, phenomenal, and was again such an amazing tap dancer. She was in West Side Story, the movie, and then I think she's in Music Man right now. Or she was.
I think so. Yeah. She works so much, and she deserves to work a lot. She's great.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, so Jenny, the motherly figure, but a lot of this, I love that a lot of this relates to like your experiences with it, because most people I talk to are either like the diehards, like they know more than I do in and outs of it, or they were in the show. And so they in the show, it's interesting to hear because they can't get the mindset out of their own character. It's like, oh, I'm not supposed to like them because my cat's not supposed to like them. So over the course of doing that, I've started to, you know, to actually bring that to real life.
Wow.
There's a lot of relationships between the cats. If you like really dig deep, that's something that I've been fascinated about asking characters, because there are some that are together. There are some that are probably brothers and sisters. There are some that might be fooling around on the side. Like, there is a very, very dark web of this community.
Damn, I'm going to have to look that. I'm going to have to like go in and type, you know, Cats the Musical Dark Web and see what comes up.
I'll send you a couple things. there's a lot there. Well, just don't do the deep dive into the fan fiction. That would be my recommendation. That will get... There are like novels out there, like full on novels of fan fiction. Most of them are between Mistopheles and Tugger. Like 90% of them are the two of them being together.
So like gay Cats the Musical fan fiction?
Mm-hmm. About those two being in a relationship together.
Yeah, I would definitely avoid that anyway.
There are like literally books.
Absurd.
I read as much as I could as research for this, you know, when I was doing the monologues of that. And even that was like, not good for my mental health. It was too deep. It was too dark. It was like a lot of, it was just like, so, I mean, the thing that's crazy about it is it's so over the top, because some of them are really, really well written. Like, these are people who put a lot of time and effort into it, and it's their outlet to write that type of, you know, it's like 50 Shades of Grey came from Twilight. Like, someone should publish one of these cast ones, but I found one with like 30 chapters.
You know, it takes me like 10 years to write a play. I don't know who has the time to write gay Cats the Musical fan fiction.
There are thousands of stories on one fan fiction website that I found. Actually, hold on. I can pull it up. I'm going to ask you my next question. And as I do that, I'm going to pull up because I have exactly how many I found at the time I read this. So
are we running out of time soon?
We're going to get to the $1 million question.
Okay. Cause I still have giveth and taketh away,
okay. Let's go through them quickly while I look this up too.
Okay. So for the film, The Cats Taketh Away. Now right after that, one of the byproducts of the film The Cats Giveth, and that's the Esquire review. You know what I'm talking
about,
I do. Right?
Well, I do because you told me about it in our pre-chat, and so I do know exactly what you're talking about.
Did you look it up?
I did.
Okay. People out there, you have to just type in Esquire Cats review. This dude from Esquire magazine was a journalist tasked to review the movie, brought his dad. I think they're from Kentucky, and he wrote his dad's review. Go in there and read it. Huge. If that's like the Adele Dazeem of Cats for me. The Cats Giveth. And then, of course, I can't do this without mentioning one of our fearless leaders, Dori Berenstein, co-founder and CEO of Broadway Podcast Network. She co-produced and directed, along with, I believe it's her daughter, Sammy Knold, a documentary called The Shows Must Go On, mm-hmm. which delved deeply into two productions. One was Phantom and the other was Cats, as they worked diligently to open and perform during like the throes of the pandemic. Not now, but way back in the day. The film is inspirational and it is wonderful. It's a wonderful ode to the theater world. So please, everybody, go find that and watch it. It's very, very...
It's brilliant.
It was
so good. Sammy did such an amazing job with it. And yeah, I mean, it's such a like a time capsule almost of like what that experience was like and... So unique. And yeah, it was the South Korea production, right? That where they did it essentially in a bubble of Cats. That was the one that she was mostly interviewing with. So wild.
Yeah, it was wild. I mean, we were completely shut down and dark over here. They're taking this to different theaters and different locations. So the Cats Giveth there. Okay. Final score. The Cats Giveth 4 times. The Cats Taketh away 2 times. So the Cats have not been that bad to Sean.
They've been good to you.
Yes, indeed.
I love it. Wow. I really thought, okay. So I definitely thought a couple of these were going to be, I thought more of your history skewed earlier, but it sounds like it's the more recent that you've really, it's giveth more recently, which I love.
Yes. It's giveth a lot lately.
Amazing.
But, you know, I did.
Okay. Now, before I pull up, I really grabbed my last question. I did pull this up. So in the Mr. Mosafly's episode, I think it's like the eighth or ninth episode, I did the research. I found 3,200 Cats the Musical stories on fanfiction.net, 203 that included Mosafly's and Tugger. And the one that I read a few lines of in that episode was written in 2009. And it had 15 chapters, 17,000 words, and it was written by Cleo Leo, and it was called Tug My Heartstrings. And I pulled out some quotes from it. So if you want to hear that, you can do. The reason I particularly picked this is because I'm assuming a she, to be honest, but the author decided that Tugger should be the Jellicle choice over Grizabella. And so as someone who has argued at length that I don't think Grizabella should be the Jellicle choice, I was really excited to see someone write a 17,000 word story that did end up with the same, you know, ending plot as mine. So that is my question for you, is what I'll ask everybody to end the show. Do you want to defend Grizabella as your Jellicle choice? Or if not, who else would you choose since we've established you'd be Old Deuteronomy?
Okay, I have a backup, but I do have to defend Grizabella. And okay. I think I have a different reason for it. My backup is Jenny Any Dots because she's eventually going to break her cat ankles if she has to keep damp dancing.
She's on the older side. It fits.
And she's heavy, you know. She's got, so maybe, but... I still have to go with Grizabella, and I'm going to read this because I can find no good reason for the other cats to hate her this much. I want to talk to the other Grizabellas and find out what they think. It's a very thinly drawn character. More importantly, Old Deuteronomy is going to need someone to take over for him. He's ancient. And I think that Grizabella and Old Deuteronomy are striking a pact up on the tire while the other cats are busy singing up, up, up past the Russell Hotel, where he expects her to come to him when she comes back down for another life. He'll train her to be the next new cat leader, and then she can send him up to the Heaviside Lair the next year if he's not dead yet. Think of the conflict and the espionage. There's Cats 2 right there for you.
Wow. Okay, so your version is, we're going to break this down here. This is my favorite part of this of every episode, is getting to hear the different theories. So your belief is that he's picking her to, as a, like, it's a collusion to make her the choice this year so that she can come back. She'll remember, you know, I guess memory. She'll remember and come back and make him the choice next year. And then she's going to now be in charge next year.
Right.
That is going to make Monkus Trap really angry.
Oh.
Because he is very much supposed to be the next in line.
Is he?
Yeah. That's one of the few things I think that, like, there's some visual cues to it of he's directly below Deuteronomy. He's one of the sons. He's the one that kind of takes charge. But I love it. I like the idea that she's going to be, I like any Cats 2 story you can start writing. So I love that she's going to die, come back. And then it's like, look, it's your turn. Then it's going to be my turn. It's going to be a quid pro quo here for totally. This whole thing. And then she's going to take over. That you are definitely the first person that's made this argument. And I love it.
Wow. You could tell I thought really hard about it.
I mean, you did put some thought in. It shocks me how a handful of people come on and are surprised when I ask this question. And I'm always like, you know, the show's called The Wrong Cat Died. Like, of course we're going to go about this. But yeah, I'm here for it. I do think that the idea that everyone hates her, I think there's some backstory to that. It seems like she abandoned them.
I can't find anything. I can't find anything in Grisabella the Glamour Cat, the song. I mean, what did she do? Did she steal cat boyfriends? Was she mean to everybody? All I can see is that she would haunt a couple of bars. So she's a barfly cat. Big deal.
The rumor is that she leaves the tribe, which is very cultish. So you're not supposed to leave to begin with. And goes and becomes like a sex worker. And so shames the tribe. And that is why, and abandoned them, and abandoned probably her children, that there's a couple that you could make an argument might be her kittens. And then she's coming back after she's kind of had a rough life.
Now, see, you're very fortunate that you had all the Grisabellas on to fill in the blanks, because I tried to find it, you know, but I was like, they're just a bunch of millennial cats and they hate her because she's old.
Oh, there is most of the stuff, which is why this show is so bizarre. You can't pick up. Like, there are a few cues. If you really watch some of them, you can pick up a couple things of, like, they might turn first, or they might, like, be staged together, so you can assume that they maybe are together. But for the most part, all of this has been filled in because the revival and the original Broadway, like, they go through the cat's story and they basically, someone will tell them every single character's whole backstory or what they're supposed to be thinking about. And none of it is, like, most of it's not portrayed super clearly on stage. It's supposed to be what they're, like, channeling as they're dancing and doing their stuff. So that's why this exists. Why my show exists.
So I'm sorry to interrupt you. I apologize. Yeah. I can't believe this. Basically, when a cast member gets hired on, they give them their whole cat story.
They give them a lot. They give them a lot more. They give them a pretty good kind of deep dive. They give them three words that are supposed to be the, like, adjectives of their character. They give them some relationships that they might be playing to. There's a couple things that are, like, very clearly, this is accepted truth. And there are a couple things that's like, yeah, we kind of assume this, but we're not positive.
Wow. I would just love to know, like, the arc of where that started and how it developed. That's a book in itself.
I have been trying to get a couple of the people that have been on it, but it's also part of the lore that I don't think they want it to be, like, fully shared. So what I have been doing, and why the show is 70 plus episodes in, is I'm getting individual versions of it from the previous cast members of what they can remember about their character. And so you can hear, you know, the past episodes, really, that's what I'm asking them about. They're digging deep into, are you related to this cat? Are you, you know, did you get told about that? What is the backstory? How do you approach this? And that's my fascination with the show currently and still.
So it's not just you go to cat school for a couple of weeks and learn how to, you know, preen yourself and
they do that
and
too.
Crawl around like a cat.
They do. Well,
I know they do that too. I didn't realize that this is another part of college.
They go through a whole, like, day or two story of the whole backstory of everybody.
Wow.
So one day I'm gonna get that cat's Bible and I'm gonna share it with the world. Until then, I'm piecemealing it together.
I'd pay a textbook price to get that cat's Bible from you. I'd pay $120 for that book.
I think a lot of people want it, and why it's probably not possible to get it very easily.
Oh, come on, Mike.
One day. I'm working on it.
You can do it. You're the guy who came in with very little knowledge about Cats, except it was going to be a movie and you've done all this.
This is true. This is true. I'm getting there. I'm slowly getting there for everybody.
Yeah, you have the objectivity to do it.
That's exactly right. Well, I want you to tell everybody a little bit about how they can hear your show and what to expect from your show and how to stay in touch.
Okay. Your program is Your Ticket is a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make it happen. It's there to give them a little help and, you know, maybe bring in some extra bodies and more money to their shows, which can sometimes make a difference in a small theater. You can find Your Program is Your Ticket on the Broadway Podcast Network, along with my friend Mike here. I am on all of the social medias, I think, except maybe TikTok. I'm on Facebook at facebook.com, Your Program is Your Ticket. I'm on Twitter at Program Ticket, Instagram and YouTube at Your Program is Your Ticket, iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Pocket Cast, that's why I screw it up, Deezer, TuneIn, Listen Notes, and I'm also on the UK-based theater platform, Thespi. And I appreciate all good ratings and reviews and subscriptions, so please do that if you would be so kind. I have a personal website. It's SeanWChandler.com. Don't forget the W, because there is a Sean Chandler that's a writer, but he writes Westerns. I'm also a writer, and you could look at all of my projects that I work on. I write plays and screenplays and TV shows and stuff. So there we go.
Amazing. And we'll put all that in the description too, so it'll be linked to make it a little easier. So
well, thanks.
Thank you for being an amazing guest and sharing your experiences with the show and your, I guess the celebration of the show validating your marriage, and all the different times you've been able to kind of see it over the years.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on, Mike. What a wonderful treat.
Amazing. And thanks everyone else for listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.